Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State, providing access to the most advanced cancer treatments available from a team specialized in treating just one type of cancer, yours. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/choosethejames.
This podcast was recorded Thursday, December 11th at 10:20 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this. Yeah, like Democrats and Republicans will reach a compromise on extending Obamacare health insurance subsidies. We shall see. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those Snollygosters, those shrewd politicians who let perceived political advantage get in the way of good government. I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up in the podcast, our Snollygoster of the Week award winner may have gotten out a little too far over his skis. But first, a political roundtable discussion about several topics in Ohio political news this week. Republican candidate for governor Vivek Ramaswamy was riffing on a TikTok video about lowering prices and suggested year-round school and a longer school day as a way for parents to save on daycare. That sparked a little social media battle with his Democratic opponent, Amy Acton. Lawmakers continue to tinker with Ohio's property tax system, trying to lower taxes while not cutting local services. And this week, Columbus has joined the line of Ohio cities looking for public taxpayer money to prop up a pro sports arena. Earlier this year, state lawmakers ponied up $600 million to help build a new Cleveland Browns domed stadium. And now it's Columbus's turn to ask taxpayers to foot much of the bill of fixing up the home of the NHL's Blue Jackets Nationwide Arena. Joining us to discuss the issues is a panel of State House insiders, Ohio Public Radio State House reporter Joe Ingles, Republican strategist Terry Casey, and former Democratic state lawmaker Lou Gentile. Let's start with the arena funding. When Nationwide Arena was built back in 2000, the private sector paid for it after voters said no to helping. The total cost back then was $175 million. That was 25 years ago. Then the public took ownership of the arena in 2012. Now the public authority that owns and runs the arena says it needs $400 million, more than double the original cost, to renovate it. And it is looking for taxpayers to pick up much of the tab. The plan calls for $150 million from the state, city, and Franklin County here in Central Ohio. Other money would come from casino taxes. That always works out well. And increases in taxes on tickets for Nationwide Arena events. The plan also includes money from private sources, including the Blue Jackets, who play at the arena rent-free and get to keep all the beer money. Terry Casey, Nationwide Arena has brought us Major League professional sports, including the NHL All-Star Game, an NCAA Final Four, which was incredible. It's brought us the Arena District. Is spending $225 million up to that in tax money a good investment?
Well, it's actually more like $400 million, and some of the things like replacing the roof and an HVA system, homeowners understand those do need to be replaced, but some of the other money for, quote, improving the fan experience, when a lot of times it just means bigger scoreboards with more advertising or other areas to sell souvenirs and profit things. I think there's a lot of questions because part of the package, as I read it, including getting the city and county to float and back a bunch of bonds, but how are the city and the county going to pay for that? And again, there were four different times in the past voters here said no, no, no to the taxpayers picking up the tab. So we'll see how they explain it and how they justify it, because a lot of sports money, more people are questioning when you can't afford the taxes or the pay the ticket price or you can't get a ticket, is it really worth subsidizing billionaire owners and millionaire players?
But Lou, these arenas, we saw it in Cleveland. Brown's new dome stadium got $600 million in unclaimed funds money from the state.
Right.
We're going to get more, I'm sure. People complain about it, but the government checks keep getting passed.
Yeah, I mean, that seems like selective outrage, right? Here we have in the city of Cleveland, they actually relocated the stadium out of the city, took it to a suburb, used $600 million backed by people who had unclaimed funds. In this instance, you have what I view as a public-private partnership, right? You have all the parties coming together to make sure that this critical asset, this arena, this region, this district is functioning and competitive. So I think it's appropriate to have these types of public-private partnerships. I think the city and the county are well within their right to go to the state of Ohio and say, Franklin County, City of Columbus, we're generating a lot of revenue for this state. We'd like some of that to come back to the community. It seems like a fair request, given what we saw in Cleveland.
So given what we saw in Cleveland, Joe, will lawmakers be receptive to helping out Columbus? Because, you know, Cincinnati is not far behind, if they haven't already asked.
I mean, they opened the spigot. So now, they've got to be, receptive to that. And when Cincinnati comes, allow them to. But the thing is that I think Lou hit on something that, right now people are looking at these things and they're not happy about the way that the government is funding these things. And the question is, how long are voters going to say, okay, we've had enough? What's that threshold?
Math is always tricky, but adjusted for inflation, the original $175 million cost in 2000 would be $330 million now for the entire arena. That's less. My math tells me that's less than $400 million that they're asking for the renovations.
Well, but when you get consultants, architects, engineers, union labor contracts, a whole lot of other things involved, and then again, it's about ego, because a lot of the things are going to stay the same. It's just all these extra things which generates more money for the sports team. So, again, there's a whole lot of questions, and I think that we need more answers before they approve it. But again, if you're going to float hundreds of millions of dollars in bonds, you ought to know who's going to pay it, pick up the tab, because when you shift money from casino receipts over to the arena, you've got less money to pay police and fire and fix the streets.
Lou, voters in 97 rejected, as Terry mentioned, that was one of those, the last one on the arena, rejected a sales tax increase for the arena.
I didn't live here then.
I know, but they rejected it by 12 points. But what that did was it prompted not a public-private partnership, but a private partnership. And it worked, really, until the Blue Jackets complained in 2012 and the public took it over. Why not just have a private partnership? Get Nationwide, get Cardinal Health, get Intel, get Anduril to pay for these renovations.
I think we do this at the local and state level a lot, though, where we provide strategic incentives for infrastructure, for things that allow these investments to work within the community. So always when you're sitting in public office, it's important to look at these and say, what's the return on investment if we're going to put public dollars in? What's the return? And in this case, I look at City of Columbus, I look at Franklin County and say, they're a significant part of the economic driver for the whole state. And that's why I think it's fair for the county and city to go to the state and say, we're making it work here.
And part of the factor back when Mr. McConnell did his deal around 1999, player salaries, coaches' salaries were not at the levels they are now. So that doesn't say it's justified, but a big reason why they get to be there rent-free is because they want the taxpayers to help subsidize so they can be more competitive. Unfortunately, the Blue Jackets, I think, only once or twice have gotten the Stanley Cup competition, haven't advanced very far. So people don't mind backing a winner like Ohio State. But when you're a perennial second-rate team, that makes people unhappy.
I'm always amazed at how many people continue to go to see those games because they've only won one playoff series in their entire existence. But, Joe, this relies on casino tax money revenue. Mm-hmm. Is that a wise idea based on projections of casino tax money have not always panned out?
No, that's a wild way to try to fund things because you're right. It can vary substantially, and especially when we have new gambling coming online all the time. What's newer is sometimes more, it's more attractive to a gambler. So, I mean, it's not a great way to fund things, but it does give them some money. And I think, we're coming to the point, though, where those kind of one-time, fundings, they're going to have to look at more sustained funding overall.
Lou, I don't know what the law says. Maybe you can't do this legally, but Columbus voters just passed a $2 billion bond package. Why wasn't this money in that package? Why not make it $2.5 billion and say we're going to fix up Nationwide Arena?
Good question. The voters are past that. I think my understanding is this would be user fees, right? That it wouldn't be necessarily tax increase, but it would be fees on.
So there'd be voluntary fees?
People that are utilizing.
When you buy a ticket, you pay a little extra? No.
Well, people that are utilizing, people that are going to the games or perhaps gambling. But again, I think, for the city of Columbus, for the Franklin County, who is a major contributor to this state in terms of tax revenue. And you look at what happened in Cleveland, and they're saying, hey, wait a minute, you know, we're really a big part of why Ohio is having so much success. All the major economic development deals are happening here. And so from my standpoint, when you're investing and when you're leveraging those local and state incentives, if you're sending money to the state of Ohio, you got to see some of that return to you.
I'll just note the calendar. In the month since the city election, City Council, Columbus City Council, has increased water rates. They've increased electric rates. They've reached a settlement with a City Council former employee on a harassment charge, and now is asking the taxpayers to approve hundreds of million dollars in money for Nationwide Arena. Yeah. Lots for us to talk about, but too bad voters couldn't talk about it before the election.
And the reason they didn't put it as part of the bond issue, because they didn't want to risk losing the bond issue over that issue if you put it in there.
Exactly.
The newly focused race for governor in that race, Republican Vivek Ramaswamy, has floated the idea, or did float the idea, of having kids go to school year-round to save parents' daycare money. His Democratic opponent, Amy Acton, jumped on it and reposted a portion of Ramaswamy's original video.
Make parenting more affordable by making school year-round and going till 4 o'clock instead of 3 o'clock so you don't have to pay for child care.
Other Ramaswamy's social media messages and videos did not mention the year-round school idea. Lou Gentile, what do you think? Year-round school, is that a good idea? And should the motivation be to save parents' daycare money?
I think the interesting thing is that they try to go back and say that this was some AI-generated deepfake instead of just owning it and taking responsibility for it. And sometimes when you do that, you make it more of an issue, right? But no, I think in some ways, to me, it sends a message that Vivek is a little out of touch with what people in Ohio are going through in terms of this child care issue. And someone who talks a lot about, you know, not wanting to invest in public schools, but wants to put this burden onto teachers. I mean, if you talk to teachers and administrators, they're going to tell you, this isn't daycare. We're not babysitters, right? We're educators. And so I think it's a bigger issue about public education. That said, though, I think Amy Acton's had a couple good weeks here. You know, her campaign seems to be building some good momentum. When I think about these two campaigns, I think about Dr. Acton gets up, eats nails for breakfast, gets on the road in her American-made car, drives all over the state of Ohio, and you have Vivek Ramaswamy flying around the state in his private jet. I think the optics of that aren't very good, and his campaign has seemed to sort of hit a rut a little bit, and I think he's getting it from both the right and left.
Terry, is this, because early on when Vivek Ramaswamy announced his campaign, he wanted to eliminate property taxes. He's sort of off the cuff, fired up, and he had to sort of backtrack on that a little bit. Is this just another case where he, you know, he's holding his phone out, making a video, and he's wonderful at it, and they're very effective, but I'm guessing if there was a campaign consultant next to him saying, hey, let's not do this one.
Well, in all honesty, the year-round schooling has some merit. My wife had many decades as a school nurse and knows that there's an awful lot of kids when you have that three-month gap. There's a deficiency that builds up because some kids have got parents that are involved in them in the summer. They're keeping learning. Other kids aren't as fortunate. So there's some reasons to look at it. That doesn't mean you'd have necessarily 12 months because you can vary the time. So this is an issue that ought to be talked about because there was not only from COVID, but from the long summer period, a lot of kids suffer from that gap, and then they restart in September or August.
But it's shoehorning it to affordability. I mean, it seems like every answer has to have affordability in it now, because that's what polls show voters care about.
What's the cost of this additional for the taxpayers to have teachers in there? And
well, depending upon how you space it out, I don't think he's talking about 12 continuous months every week of class.
Talking about extending the school day.
Right, adjusting the schedule, because a lot of this whole business of the summer off from school goes back to the 1800s when we were an agriculture economy and very few people worked off the farm.
So Joe, why not make that argument instead of the affordability? Is it because affordability, everything has to be about lowering prices for everybody, lowering taxes for everybody?
Well, affordability is a huge issue, and it probably will be the big issue going into next year for voters. But I think the thing that we have to remember is that it is going to cost more money to have year-round school. Depending on how you structure it, it could cost significantly more money. And right now, the public schools, a lot of them are saying that they can't make ends meet with what they're getting. So, you know, maybe the option is to have better daycare possibilities, other kinds of things. I mean, it's a whole discussion.
Yeah.
So it needs to be framed in that way.
Now, Amy Acton was quick to jump on this. Year-round school is bad. But there could be a lot of parents out there that say, for what Terry said, the education results could be better. You know, you don't lose that gap. Is it the teachers' union she's trying to curry favor with here rather than parents?
Listen, public education has really been the whipping boy in the state of Ohio now for decades, and the GOP has continued to cut public education. They've continued to sort of shift that burden onto Betty and Bob Buckeye, so to speak, the property taxpayers. But I will say, you know, this affordability issue, it is going to be a bigger issue. And the president right now is dismissing this issue. And I think that's going to be impactful in this upcoming race. And I think, obviously, Vivek and his campaign is scrambling to figure out how to address this issue because the president is saying it's a con job. And we know that when people go out, their electric costs are up, their food costs and grocery costs through the roof, their property taxes. So it's an issue, and it's going to be an issue, I think, to come to creep back to get them in the fall.
Well, Lou misses a couple things. You've been out of the legislature for a while. In the last 4 years, they've added $3.1 billion more at a time when K through 12 enrollment's shrinking. And the Columbus schools have got some challenges, too many buildings, not enough students. But the Columbus schools, the Dispatch reported this past week, has $300 million cash on hand. So that isn't going to last forever. But some of the schools cry poor mouth when they actually have more money than what they let on.
But tell you, $1 billion to private schools. You want to send your kid to a private school? I went to private school. You pay for
it. But the public
schools, you don't ask
got
the taxpayers to underwrite it.
All right, that's a bigger topic. We're going to go on to, speaking of paying for schools, lawmakers continue to try to tweak state law to lower property taxes, which pay for schools. A new proposal would require a payment plan option for property taxpayers and make levy language easier to understand. Another bill would offer an incentive to Ohio's 2,200 local government entities to merge. The bill would give local governments up to $2.5 million to merge and presumably cut costs and then need less property taxes. Joe Ingles, these are on the edges, really. A payment plan,
right.
I mean, that's not going to lower anyone's property taxes.
No.
It's going to spread out the payments, which would be nice, perhaps. But.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. They're tinkering around the edges. It's not going to make a big difference in the bottom line. But the thing is, it's something. It's more than we've had before. And there's a discussion there that needs to be had. We're kind of getting at it at this table right now. You know, where do public dollars, where do they belong? What does the public pay for? That's what needs to be the discussion, you know. And it seems like at the State House we're hearing a lot of things that are trying to go around the edges, but we really haven't heard anything that actually addresses in total how to spend tax money.
The incentives for it's 1,300 townships, I believe, maybe even more in Ohio, Terry. The incentive isn't nice to get these townships to merge with a city nearby or maybe combine townships. Is $2.5 million enough?
No, you need a lot more and other ways to encourage. But part of the problem, it's hard to generalize in a state as big as Ohio, because one former trustee in an area near where you live, Mike, explained to me what works in one township in Franklin County might or might not work in other rural counties where the townships are much smaller. So it's hard to generalize. But there are success stories out there. I was on the library board here in Columbus for 14 years. It's nice to know today not only the Columbus Library, the Franklin County Libraries, but other adjoining libraries have their card catalogs, in essence, pooled together, and you can draw from 4 million ideas, 4 million items. So there's some of it's happened, but we need a lot more of it in order to save taxpayer money.
Can I just say, you look at this issue of property taxes, there were several bills that were just passed in the legislature. What the question becomes is, will the voters and the people at home who are really struggling with this issue, who live on fixed incomes in a lot of these rural areas and small communities, will they really feel the impact of this? And I'm not so sure that these bills collectively are going to dramatically reduce their bills and dramatically alleviate that burden. And so I don't know that it also has done enough to blunt this statewide ballot initiative. I'm also not sure this organization can get the signatures they need.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, if they did, it would be a disastrous initiative. But so I'm just not sure that what the legislature has done, when you take it all together, will really hit hard and at home. And people will say, hey, my taxes have really been reduced.
That property tax issue is not going away, but if the group pushing for the elimination of property taxes does not get on the ballot, lawmaker urgency will certainly lessen. Voters will still want them to lower property taxes or at least keep them in check, but the threat of a ballot issue would be gone and the need for drastic change would evaporate, and lawmakers will be able to stall and tinker for a long time to come.
My thanks to former Democratic State Rep Lou Gentile, Republican strategist Terry Casey, and Ohio Public Radio State House reporter Joe Ingles. We'll be right back.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
Time now for our Snelligoster of the Week segment, where we honor the shrewdest politician or political move of the past half fortnight. For the past 10 years, after Donald Trump made immigration topic number one for his supporters and rode the issue to his win in 2016 and his reelection in 2024, he and his supporters race each other to tough out each other when it comes to immigration law. Who can be the toughest on illegal immigrants? Well, U.S. Senator Bernie Moreno, an immigrant himself, has been one of those racing hard to stay with and even ahead of the president when it comes to immigration. Moreno emigrated from Colombia as a young child with his family and became a U.S. citizen as a teenager and renounced his Colombian citizenship. Now he wants everyone to do the same. He has introduced a bill that would ban dual citizenship in the United States. He says, quote, "Being an American citizen is an honor and a privilege. And if you want to be an American, it's all or nothing. It's time to end dual citizenship for good." So for him, it's very simple, until it gets complicated. President Trump's wife has dual citizenship. Melania Trump is a citizen of the U.S. and her native Slovenia. Their son, Barron Trump, has dual citizenship. He has citizenship with the United States and Slovenia. They are not alone. Elon Musk is a citizen of three countries, the U.S., South Africa, and Canada. Lots of celebrities are dual citizens. Many Americans of Jewish descent are also citizens of Israel. They took advantage of Israel's law of return, which was passed soon after the State of Israel's founding. Under Moreno's bill, 1 year after the bill becomes law, they would all have to either renounce their foreign citizenship or lose their U.S. citizenship. Imagine that discussion at the Trump dinner table if the president signs this bill. Whatever the motivation, Bernie Moreno's dual citizenship ban has gotten attention, and for that, he gets our Snolligoster of the Week award. That'll do it for this week's edition of Snolligoster, which is part of the NPR network. You know, next week we will look at a new Emerson University poll that just came out. It shows the races for governor and U.S. Senate here in Ohio are basically tied. Not a huge surprise, but we'll take a closer look at it next week. A reminder, in this season of giving, we ask you to give us a good review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast, and just tell your friends about us. That's the best source of marketing for us. For our digital producer, Michael DeBonis, our audio engineer, Dalton Jones, I'm Mike Thompson for Snolligoster from WOSU Public Media.